Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
All right, you guys should be, we should be live now. Hopefully you guys can hear us. If you're out there and you're alive, let us know just by putting in there, yes, I'm alive. It's Tuesday. Even a alive, yes. Even a period or an exclamation point would work. Yes, alive and kicking. That's what we should be thankful for. We had a friend of ours pass last week, and all I can think of is, we're so lucky, you know. Sometimes you take it for granted. Bad stuff happens. So happy St. Pat. Yeah. Oh, Jeff and his hat. Forgot that was sitting up there. You got a nice buckle. What an artist. What an artiste. All right. So there's some thank yous. Alive, alive. Fantastic. We got a whole bunch of people popping on. You never know exactly how many people we're going to get. It's usually many hundreds, sometimes more than 1,000. I imagine that this in about a month, we're going to see it get crazy. Look at this. For some reason, all my chat says Kayla. Never seen that happen. I'm going to cancel that, and then I'm going to go reopen it because there's no way that Kayla is chatting with us 600 times. Let's see if I can figure out how to do that. There it is. Little dot. Oh, it likes to torment me, this machine. There we go. Oh, now, nope, still doing it. Weird. All right, guys. So, yeah, some people say it's everybody's name, apparently, or a bunch of guys, apparently, are Kayla today. So that's kind of weird. Something must have gone out on that email. So everybody, look at that. We don't know why the computers are doing what they're doing, and we're just going to ignore them. We're just going to jump straight on in. So first off, thanks for coming on. My name's Toby Mathis, and this here to my right is Jeff Webb.
Yep, that's me.
And Jeff is a stud when it comes to taxes. And so we're really lucky to have him. He's on here with me every other Tuesday and has to endure my nonsense.
Endure.
I endear myself.
Whichever works.
With years of nonsense. All right, so here we go. The questions that we get. Yeah. Kayla, you're all over the country, by the way, because apparently you're in New York and Rhode Island. Let me know where you guys are from, by the way. This is always fun to see where everybody's at. If you don't mind just putting in your city, you don't have to even put your state. We might be able to figure out where you are. I said a city in California, Las Vegas, Martin. Oh my gosh. New Orleans, Raleigh, Ogden, Baltimore, Orlando, Ohio, Baton Rouge, Atlanta, Peoria, New York City, Oak Harbor. Ooh, up there. Boston, Orange County, Tacoma. Yes. Fresno, Houston, Los Angeles, Alexandria, Odessa, Porter Ranch. We have a lot of people on from all over the place. Mm-hmm. Honolulu, I am jealous. I'll be there right on over there.
They're getting pretty heavy rains there.
They are? Oh, yeah, they had some issues, didn't they?
Yeah.
Vail, Sarah, you're in Vail. We just did we didn't do a conservation easement, but some of our clients invested in a conservation easement in Vail last year. All right. So we're here to answer your questions and hopefully have a little bit of fun and make taxes not miserable for you. By the way, speaking of misery, I was quoted in a newspaper today, and I didn't expect them to do it, but the quote was, this tax season is a dumpster fire. And the reason is because it's a dumpster fire. The IRS is literally telling us, please don't file amendments after the COVID CARE Act, whatever it's called, the most recent tax act that was signed last week, changed taxes for 2020 in the middle of the 2020 tax season. How's that make you feel, Jeff?
That makes me feel wonderful.
And they're still opening up their mail from July. If you paper filed, there's a very good chance that they cashed your check and didn't put you in their system as having received it, which gives us all sorts of warm fuzzies because they start sending you collection letters, which means then you call us and you say, what the hell did you guys do? We look at it, we could see the payment and everything, but the IRS has not processed any of the mail. So it's a dumpster fire.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about extending the deadline again this year, and it's not to help out all the Americans. It's primarily because IRS is such a train wreck right now.
It Buster Click. I like that. Rowena, you are absolutely 100% correct. It is a Buster Click. And I didn't swear.
No.
But it's really tough. It is tough on the agents. It's tough on everybody. Of course, when we do it, they don't show much. They don't really cry tears. They just go forward like mindless robots. But when they do it, then we're kind of at their mercy. So here's what you do is you take a big breath. What I'm telling everybody, which I always, this has been the consistent for 20 years plus, file an extension. Take yourself out of the madness. Give yourself some time. Your taxes right now, as it stands right now, mm-hmm. your individual taxes are due on April 15th, but your tax return, you get an automatic extension to file that until October 15th. So go ahead and pay your estimated tax. If you're really worried, pay 110% of whatever you paid last year, and you don't have to worry about the penalties and interest. And then breathe and relax and let this whole, there's probably going to be more changes, and it may impact the 2020 tax season. They've shown a willingness to do that now. So they made $10,200 of unemployment, non-taxable. If they're going to do another stimulus act, my guess is that they're going to focus in on helping the lower incomes and a lot of the folks that are on unemployment. All right. You guys can ask questions in the question and answer. We have Elliot. We have Pio on. Is Pio out there? I think he is. I don't see him sitting up here, but somebody needs to bring him up.
Christos.
Christos should be up there. I don't see the names, but they're supposed to be. I see Pio answering. So something's going on with Zoom. Our interface doesn't like us much today.
And I'm not sure if Tavia is on to help with the bookkeeping questions.
So maybe. Hey, Elliot, are you out there? Are you alive? Maybe you can tell me who's on, because I can't see it.
We got Susan, Christos, and I believe Pio is on as well.
Perfect. We love it. So he says, I emailed a question last week. Did they not get it, or do I need to ask in chat? We answer them pretty quick. So, yeah, somebody says Pio's here. But you could ask it again. And I wouldn't answer it and ask it in chat. Go into the Q&A area. Chat is where I get immediate response. I want to make sure that if you have a question, the accountants that are on will answer it. And, yeah, we don't charge for this. People always say, why the heck don't you charge for it? Because I don't want to. Do you want to? You do. Jeff likes to charge for things. I like to give it away. All right. Opening questions. We're going to answer all of these and more today. If I purchased depreciable business property this year for $200,000, eligible for bonus depreciation, 100% bonus depreciated it in 2020, use it for 5 years, and then sell the property for $50,000, will I have to recapture the $150,000 that was depreciated in year one upon sale? Is there an exemption to this rule where recapture is not warranted? We will answer that. If a nonprofit org opened a trading account and got options income, plus capital gains, of less than $50,000, does the nonprofit file an income tax return? And they said, besides the 990N, we will answer that. Are losses from gambling deductible? No gambling. We don't gamble around here. We're in Las Vegas. We have strict rules against it, right? We've only built the whole city on it. But yeah, we'll answer that too. I want to draw down about $250,000 from my 401k this year, possibly to buy 1 to 3 investment properties. Can I use bonus depreciation from the properties to offset the income taxes from my 401k drawdown? Interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
I have a rental property that is owned by my self-directed IRA. Does it need to be in an entity, or is it safe from the IRA? We'll knock that one out too. How do you claim the solar credit on your personal residence? I have a feeling Jeff's going to like to answer that. Doing a cost segregation on a condo that was purchased out of my inherited trust to pay off other beneficiaries, can I take bonus depreciation? So we'll explain all those pieces. There's a few things to dissect there. I love those types of questions, by the way. I inherited a property and had been living in it. I then got married and am now getting a divorce. I'm so sorry to hear that. To avoid paying tax and having to share the profit with my partner. Now we know why. No, I'm just kidding. Can I put it in an LLC first before I make any move with the sale and divorce? So we'll go over that. If I control a foreign domiciled company, then what would trigger me personally being personally taxed on the company's profits. Can you include your roof replacement for the solar tax credit? I love that question. It's actually a really good one. Then last but not least, how is the office in-home deduction being treated since most of us have been working from home? Still a red flag for realtors, question mark. So we have a whole bunch of fun. Oh, by the way, this is really nice right there. So Robert says, Elliot, thank you for answering my question last time after the webinar ended. I did notice. Thanks. Just so you guys realize, these accountants are hanging around, and we'll end the webinar. But if you have questions, we're still going through and answering them. Why we do it? I don't know. Give, get. You have to give. You have to give in this world. When we start losing our giving spirit is when we're really toast. All right. Hopefully you guys can see this. I can see it. That little bottom part's kind of messing me up. So let me see. I may look at a new share here if I could actually see. Forget it. This thing's so annoying. I'm going to redo this setup just so you guys know. Let my tech guys know, because I can never see the mouse just disappears for whatever reason. We have a March 27th tax and AP event, absolutely free. It's live online. You just click there, free on March 27th. We go over everything from land trust, LLCs, corporations, living trust, IRA, 401k, how to get the most out of it tax-wise as well. Feel free to go to the link, aba.link, March TAP, Tax and Asset Protection. Kind of a creative, I like this link. These guys are thinking really good now. aba.link/March TAP, Tax and Asset Protection. If you haven't been to one, join us. And if you have been to one, join us. Somebody says, who's the little guy in the middle? What? Who does that? The little guy. What's kind of sad is those guys are behemoths. They're like really big. They're like 300 pounders. And then there's little me.
Huge.
Okay, they're not 300 pounds. Depending on the day. Maybe getting close. If I purchase depreciable business property this year for $200,000. So they buy $200,000 of equipment, for example, and take 100% bonus depreciation. You can do that under 168K, or actually, you know, bonus depreciation is 168K. Otherwise, you take the 179 deduction, which nobody's doing right now because you have 168K. Then sell the property later for $50,000. Do you have to recapture? So let's set this table 5 years later. So let's say they put it into service in 2020, sell it in 2026. We'll have, and I sell it for $50,000. Do I have to recapture the depreciation I took? And if I do, are there any exceptions?
So let's talk about recapture here for a minute. There are two types of depreciable property, 1245 and 1250. 1245 is your tangible personal property, like you said, the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
1250 is business real estate that you're depreciating.
Mm-hmm.
They both have different rules for recapture. The 1250, the real estate has different tax rates. When it comes into play, it's just the difference between straight line and accelerated. The 1245 personal tangible property, anytime you sell that at a gain, you're going to pay recapture on that.
Mm-hmm.
The one rule that's the same for both is that your recapture is going to be limited to whatever gain that you have on that property when you sell it. So your recapture is going to be on the $50,000 that could be taxed at ordinary rates. You will not pay recapture on the $150,000.
Yes. All right. So what if they had sold it in the second year?
If bonus, it really doesn't make a difference. If it's 179 through an S corporation,
then we have to be careful.
Then we could have some huge issues. And what I'm getting at is with a 179 and the S corporation or partnership, that's not even calculated within the entity. It comes out to you on your K-1. And then you have to calculate how it's taxed on your 1040.
What you don't want to do is like have a business car, buy the business car, depreciate the heck out of it. And before its useful life is up, move it back into personal property, because mm-hmm. you're going to have ordinary income on that portion, plus any amount of money you receive for it.
Yeah. And that's going to be true of most tangible property you may have in a business, is that you can't just have it in there for a year or two and distribute it out to yourself. Because there's going to be tax consequences to that. You're probably going to have to bring it out of fair market value. You may have a gain in your corporation or S corporation, and it's going to have consequences to you as either distribution or dividend or something like that.
But this one's good. This example is good. So I took a $200,000. Even if I had it on financing, I get a $200,000. So let's say that this is a big piece of computer equipment or a press or something being used in industry. And I had it, and I had a 5-year note. And so I bought it in 2020. I took a $200,000 deduction. Very, very nice. Good job. And then I use it for 5 years, and I used it up, and I sell it off to somebody for the salvage value at $50,000. So I took a $200,000 deduction, and I got $50,000 back. So it makes sense I would pay tax on the $50,000 as ordinary income. I got the $200,000 deduction. I wrote off the interest payments. I didn't write off the payments of principal because I already wrote it off, so I don't get to write off the same equipment twice. But this just is logic. This just makes sense. Somebody says, if I bought a property 30 years, right here, sorry, guys, I'll pop over here and then I'll answer some of your questions. All right. If a nonprofit org opened a trading account and had options income, so they sold options, chances are they have a trading account with a bunch of dividend stocks or something, and they're selling options to generate income, which is super smart and I totally endorse, then they have all this income. Maybe it's $10,000. Does the nonprofit actually file a tax return?
If you have gross receipts of under the $50,000, then you just file the 990N.
Which is an online postcard
that
takes about 3 minutes to file, right?
And the way they define gross receipts, it's
contributions.
Investment income, contributions, things like that.
Everything that you made, anything that they gave, any money that you made.
Yeah, so you're counting like investment income. You're not counting what stocks you sold. You're counting the capital gains on, like you said.
Right, the actual income. This is fun. If I bought a property 30 years ago for $100,000, have fully depreciated, now sell it for $60,000, how much of a capital loss do I have, if any? It depends on what your basis is.
Yeah, if it's fully depreciated and you sold it for $60,000, you don't have a capital loss. You actually have a capital gain.
Mm-hmm. Unless you put a lot of improvements on it. So if you bought it for $100,000, you put $100,000 into it. You depreciated the improvement value. Let's say the improvement value is 70.
Mm-hmm.
So your basis, you have 30 plus 130, and you sell it for 60. Now you're going to have a little bit of a loss.
Yeah, so when you're depreciating a property, you're also lowering your basis every time you take depreciation. Mm-hmm. So if you buy it at $100,000 in the first year, it's going to be $97,000, $94,000. Until year 30, it's going to be worth zero.
So let's just say on this one, just because it's fun. I don't know. I think these things are fun. So let's just say that they bought it. Oh, where do we go? So they bought it at $100,000. You can't depreciate land, so you take the land value out. And so we had $70,000 that we depreciated, but then we put improvements of $100,000 in, which would really suck.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have your land, you subtract off your basis. So you're really, your basis is going to be what, about $130,000 without factoring in like certain costs, the transaction costs, and you sell it for 60. Now you're looking at potentially having a little bit of a loss. Your loss is going to be what, $70,000?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Our tax is fun. All right. I have tree homes. My primary
tree homes.
I have tree homes. I was thinking up at the trees, and they go, my primary residence in two rounds. So three homes. All right. That's fun. The three under my name, the last property acquired in March of 2020. However, due to the pandemic, I haven't been able to rent the second property. They're under my name, not LLCs. How do I handle taxes since I've lost a full year of rental income? You're going to depreciate the three properties, first off, as long as they were available for rent.
Were there three rentals or two rentals?
My primary residence and two rentals. Okay. Yeah, so they're going to depreciate the two. You're right. Sorry. Even though you weren't able to rent it, as long as it was available for rent, right? Yeah. You're just not going to be able to create a loss, I don't believe.
Yeah, we're under the assumption that you were trying to rent it out and just couldn't find somebody to move into it.
Great question. Are losses from gambling deductible?
Not exactly.
Jeff's an expert at this.
So losses are deductible on Schedule A up to the amount of your gambling winnings.
I saw Jeff hit on 20 once. Go ahead, sorry.
I don't know if I can. if you have gambling losses, they are deductible on Schedule A as long as you have gambling winnings reported on the front of your tax return.
Mm-hmm. So if you have 10,000 of winnings and 12,000 of losses, or I guess I would say losers, so winners and losers, can you take the $2,000 of losers?
So you lose the $2,000 forever.
No. So if you lose, unless you're what, a professional gambler, maybe.
And I only have one of those.
Yeah, you have to be like, you make your living doing it. But yeah, it kind of stinks. You lose it. It's not even carried forward, right?
You just
lose it.
Fortunately, when they did away with those miscellaneous itemized deductions, this stayed on the tax return. So yeah, it's nice to have.
Mm-hmm. Hey guys, by the way, we're number one. Numero uno in new releases in financial planning. So this is Infinity Investing. If you haven't gone through the course, I would enjoy it if you would. But we'd love it if you'd go to Amazon and pre-order. The book comes out, I think it's going to be April 13th. We're already getting the physical books in, and Amazon's going to be stocked up. But we'd really appreciate it if you did it. And then if you do, please read it and give us your honest comments. It's one of those things. I never anticipated writing an investment book because I try not to give people advice or second guess. But after 20 something years of doing this, and Jeff and I look at the schedulees, and we're always chatting about who's making money, what do they do? And I've been staring at like stock investors. I know who makes money and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, all right, just here's the things that work for people over and over and over again. And then we compared it to the IRS data to see if it was just us. And it's not. Like if you do these things in Infinity Investing, you're going to have success because statistically speaking, you become the casino. And so it's the old adage that if I play slots long enough, I'm going to lose every dollar that I put in there, because statistically speaking, the law of averages, the way it works is you will. And somebody says it's the book on Audible. It's being recorded as we speak. So it's not up there yet. But by all means, still get yourself a physical version, Kindle version, share it with folks and invite them to join us. Infinity Investing, the basic membership is absolutely free. Absolutely free. Can we get an autograph copy? Yes, absolutely. What I'll do is if you show that you purchased one, I'll probably just send you an autographed one afterwards, and then you can gift the other one. This is not a moneymaker for us. It's a life changer for us. So we try to build better clientele so that we can help them with their tax situation when they make money. So it's kind of like, it's like the barber giving you hair cream to make your hair grow faster. We can cut it more often. So yes. Where do we show? If you just give me a receipt, or if you just take a picture of you with the book, I'll send you an autographed copy when it's all said and done. And that's just me telling you that. And Patty, you're going to have to make that happen because I suck. Let's keep it real. All right. I want to draw, because they're going to come to me in a month and they're going to say, did you ever say this? And I'll be like,
We love keeping Patty busy. It keeps her happy.
Maybe. And I'll remember this one now because I've triggered my memory. But sometimes I do say things and I'll be like, I probably did, Patty. Probably gave away a bunch of stuff. All right. Sorry, Patty. All right. She's not even on right now. So Susan, you're going to have to do it. I was thinking Patty was on and she's on our Edges training, the customer service training. All right. I want to draw down about $250,000 from my 401k this year, possibly to buy 1 to 3 investment properties. So drawing down, I'm assuming, means you want to take it out and pay the tax on it. You wanted to answer this one and go over the rules?
Yeah. And you asked, can I use bonus depreciation from the properties to offset? If you do cost segregations, if you pull money out, you buy these properties in your name and you do cost segregations, as long as you're a real estate professional, you will be able to use the bonus depreciation to help offset some of your income taxes. However, I kind of disagree with this whole proposal. I think instead I would probably buy the properties within my 401k.
That's absolutely. I saw this last week in somebody, and I was having a little conversation with them online, and they said, well, I'm a real estate professional. And I said, that's the only way I could see it. because if they buy enough properties, they could offset the $250,000 of income, and they didn't have other income or not much. And so I was like, okay, so you're going to pay 10% on it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Get it out of there now. But I'm with you. I think I'd rather see them invest inside it. Or if you want, depending on how much money you have in there and whether you have a spouse who's participating, you might just want to borrow some of it out. Maybe do a combination, borrow $50,000 each, take a little bit out.
The problem with pulling this much money out, if they're subject to the 10% penalty too, we know they're going to pay at least 35% tax on this money.
Yeah. Now, there's one other side to this is under the CARES Act, they opened it up and allowed you to borrow $100,000 per participant in for a good portion of 2019. I don't know if that's going to come back. It's one of those things where maybe you write your congressman, because I would like to see it. But plus, money's cheap right now. Mm-hmm. Money's cheap. Buy it. Don't take it out of your 401k. Your 401k is going to grow faster than the money that you're borrowing it for the most part. This is really one of the few times in my entire life that I would ever say something like that. But depending on what your 401k, whether you have control of it or your employer has control of it, this is the lowest interest rates have been.
Yeah, I believe I heard yesterday was at 1.9 something.
You're getting down to the 2% side, yeah. And then do I have to do a RMD calculation for this? So here's where it could work. If you're over 55 and you take it out, you could avoid the 10% if you're going to take out like the whole thing or equal portions over under 72T. So we could avoid the 10% if you're over 55, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so this is one of those scenarios where we just take a look and just see whether there's most effective. So this is one where you'd actually want to sit down with somebody. And the three rules we use, if you haven't heard them before, is calculate, calculate, calculate.
I wasn't sure what the third one was.
Yeah, or what do they say, the German way? Calculate, calculate, calculate. No, excuse me, I just did that backwards, right? That was Inglourious Basterds, right? Remember when he ordered the beers?
Yeah.
So
another thing you might want to consider if you do want to pull this money out is buy a house this year, pull the money out for that. If you want to buy a second house, wait till after the end of the year, buy a second house. Mm-hmm. And with this crazy real estate market, we're never sure what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no idea. I don't think anybody does. Here's what we know about the real estate market, because you guys know I'm a junkie for going onto the Fed sites and looking around. There's not enough houses. There's really not enough housing for low income. Like, it's been dropping for 10 years. So it's pretty scary. So I don't think housing prices, I think that people need housing like viciously bad. Mm-hmm. And especially our elders and our the poorest amongst us are really suffering right now. And so we're seeing a lot of people, like you saw Warren Buffett, make huge investments, the largest investor in mobile home parks, period, in the United States. So they're, you know, you're seeing people that are serious starting to focus on certain areas. I can't see the real estate market going away. There's just too much.
Yeah, we're even seeing some of the local builders in Vegas that they're no longer selling houses. They're auctioning off their houses because they can make so much more money.
Yep. Look at this. So many good questions. What is the best way to get traditional IRA funds over to a Roth with paying the least amount of taxes if you're over 55? If you set it up under 72T, you could pay tax periodically over a set number of years. Mm-hmm. And move it. But I don't know if I am, honestly. I'm going to do the number check. It's not like IRAs, Roth compared to traditional, they're equal if the tax rates stay roughly the same. If your tax rate's higher and you're going to be lower when you retire, traditional wins out. If it's the opposite, I'm in the lowest tax rates now and I'm going to be higher. So like if you're in the zero, you know you're going to be higher, right? Put it in the Roth. So kids and young adults should almost always do Roths.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into it. Somebody says, are we talking about solar panels today? There's two questions on there about solar. So we'll get to them here in a second.
Can we get Kayla scheduled for a tax consult? Because she's got a lot of questions.
This is the meanest thing Zoom's ever done to us, by the way, is Kayla is the default name on everything. Like, we're getting all these messages from Kayla, questions from Kayla. So we know it's not Kayla, but I still think it's funny. All right. I have a rental property that is owned by my self-directed IRA. Does it need to be in an entity or is it safe in the IRA?
This is a that depends question.
Well, the individual owner of an IRA is always liable for the acts of the IRA personally. So if I set up an IRA and the IRA has liability, comes to me personally.
This does not depend.
This is actually pretty straight. And that's the issue. That's with any retirement plan, the participant's liable. So if you get real estate, that's why your brokers and stuff are oftentimes saying, no, you can't invest in real estate, because they don't want to be the one that buys you something and gets you sued and costs you everything else you own. Because then what are you going to do? You're going to turn around and do what to that person? You're going to sue the lightning out of them. So self-directed IRA custodians will do it, and they'll have you sign off and say, you know, this is you. You're choosing this. And the custodian will actually say, are you directing me to do it? And you say, yes. They're shifting the responsibility back over to where it should be, which is you, if you're the one who's in control of it. So what I would do is I would put it in an LLC. And more than likely, self-directed IRAs to me aren't my favorite. I would rather have a 401k. And the reason being is because I'm in charge. I don't need a custodian if I have a self-directed IRA. I also don't have unrelated debt financed income, so I can get loans against it and I don't have to worry about tax. And I can, like, if it's a husband and wife or, you know, a couple people, they can pool their money. They don't have to have an IRA on title or have a LLC that's owned by two different entities. They could just have one.
Going back to a question earlier about RMDs, when you have real estate in it, that's one reason most custodians hate what we call hard to value assets. Mm-hmm.
You can distribute a partial ownership of that.
Yeah.
It gets weird.
Right. Otherwise, you end up having to do some type of valuation to come up with your RMD amount.
Mm-hmm. Somebody says, I'm going to go back to this. It is my understanding that if I start Roth IRAs for teenagers, that they can essentially put up to $6,000 in each year tax-free, since they are not required to pay tax in that small. Is this true? Yes, it's because you have standard deduction of $12,800 this year.
Yeah, they just have to have the earnings to cover that $6,000.
Should they file a tax return? You don't actually have to, because you're not going to have any taxable income. Is my income relevant to this? No. The only thing you might have is a custodial IRA, where if they're too young, so if they're in their teens, I think you're going to be doing up till 18. I think you're going to be doing custodial IRA, where you may have to sign off on it. Still theirs. And so, Krista, that's one of the smartest things you could ever do, because one of the misunderstandings about Roth is that it's taxable when you take it out, or that you have to keep it in there for a certain period for it not to be penalized when it comes out. Mm-hmm. No, I can always take out what I put in it tax-free, meaning that I didn't get a deduction for it. I don't have a penalty for taking it out. The only thing that I have to worry about is the earnings on it. So if I put in $15,000 and I make $10,000, I could take the $15,000 out that I put in, no problem. They could always use that as an emergency fund. It's the $10,000 of gain that they have a five-year waiting period on without any penalty. So just to let you know, you're going to have a tax hit on that one, but it's far, like, you get young people into the Roth, or, you know, traditional IRA too works great, but the Roth just means they'll never pay tax about it. Somebody just asked, I'm talking about converting from a traditional to Roth and tax implications. Is there any benefit if you want your Roth to go to your spouse who is considerably younger? Probably not. Maybe on the, if you're going to stretch it, if you're going to do a stretch IRA, and you're going to pass and you pay the tax now, you might have a longer period of time. But the SECURE Act made for a spouse, that 10-year is not going to be applicable. So if you have a considerably younger spouse, let's say it's 20-year difference or something like that, that might be a situation where you take the hit now, because you're like, hey, when he or she needs those funds, like in a Roth, you don't have a required minimum distribution. So let's just say they're 80 when they need it, 90 when they need it. There's no tax during all that time, no tax when they take it out. That'd be kind of fun. All right, what do we have? How do I claim the solar credit on your personal residence?
This is much easier than you think it is. There's a form called Form 5695. It's for residential energy credits. You put in how much you pay for the solar. You multiply times the percentage credit, which is 26%.
26%. They raised it up from 22 to 26%.
And that's going to be your credit. It's really simple. If you do it on tax software, TurboTax or something, it's going to be extremely easy.
Yeah. And if you have a low, if you're lower income, and I don't mean like in a bad sense, you can use a free tax prep tool. If you have real estate or if you have investments, that's when you use a professional. And realistically, those are probably going to be in a partnership anyway. So you're just taking your K-1. It's up to you. Do you care about stuff like that?
No, I don't. I sometimes hate seeing people pay a lot of money to have a tax return prepared that they could have done themselves.
Well,
it was cost them a lot of money.
There's congressional testimony on it last year because so many people that should have been able to do free tax filings were tricked into doing paid for filings by the, it was Intuit and H&R Block. Yeah. And they still awarded them the contract to do it again. You know, no consequences, one of those things. All right. So we're going to talk about solar credit again. I saw that there was another question about it, but I'm going to say this is that a lot of accountants get stuck in the idea that the solar credit is only a personal credit. There's also section 48, which is for business assets. Mm-hmm. And that's different. They're completely different. And when there's a guidance issued on the investment property, it doesn't mean it's impacting the personal residence. And there are some situations where people get caught up, the accountant gets confused, and they're using the wrong section. Make sure that if you're doing personal residence, it's not a rental. And I think it's section 25. It's really straightforward. If you're doing a rental property, it's not the same thing. It's the same percentage, but it's a little bit different. And you're going to do your credit and you're going to depreciate it. What other fun stuff? Can I convert my self-directed IRA to a solo 401k? You could roll a self-directed IRA into a solar 401k. You cannot roll a Roth IRA into anything.
Right.
Possibly another Roth IRA, but you can't roll it to the Roth 401k. You can roll a Roth 401k into a Roth IRA. Like, there's funky little rules. That's why you talk to folks like us. Just email us or ask us the question. Are there restrictions for backdoor Roth IRAs? Mina, we can get $58,000 a year into a Roth IRA if you want to. We know the mechanism to do it. You're going to have to make sure that you have a business, that you have a 401k, that 401k has a Roth component and a profit share, and a profit share is probably about all you need. And you're going to have to take a pretty sizable salary, but you'll get that much money in there. It's just, again, calculate. Make sure it's worthwhile, that you're not in a super high tax bracket, in which case then I'll probably say don't do that. But if you're in a lower tax bracket and you were able to get the money because you had, maybe you're a real estate professional and you have a whole bunch of losses that you can take and you can offset that income, then that becomes our friend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Social media, blatant solicitation, aba.link, and then anything, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, follow us, please. We like it. Somebody says, I don't necessarily agree with traditional and Roth are similar to each other in regards. Here, I'm going to read a question, guys, just because it seems like it's from an accountant or somebody knows their stuff. Toby, I don't necessarily agree with traditional and Roth are similar to each other in regards to tax rates. Totally. I expect my retirement accounts to be worth a lot more than my contributions. Therefore, if my account grows 10 times, I only pay tax on 1x at the lower rate. So that's the Roth, the 9X is tax-free in the Roth. On a traditional, I pay tax on the 10X. Yeah, my thought. In Robert, I'm not disagreeing. You calculate it. So if we have this is why it's different. So let's just say that I put in $10,000 into an account and then it grows 10X. My after-tax value, if I put it in a Roth, I had to make about $14,000. So let's just say that it was $10,000, but I have to pay the tax on it. So I have to pay, like, let's say it's three, and I have a seven, and 10X is 70, right? So let's just say that it grows 10 times. So $70,000 upon retirement, and that comes out tax-free versus I put the whole 10 and I 10X and it's 100, but I have to pay tax coming out. If it's the same tax form, I'm going to have seven after I've taken it out over time, right? So those are the same number, 70 or 70. I'm saying is that they're built to be equal unless you go crazy. Like if you do like the PayPal stuff where the guy makes $6 million in a Roth, you're a rock star. But what I have a problem is I see people who are in the high tax brackets going after that Roth. And I'm like, you're really putting, you're like, if I could deduct that, I already have a 30% gain And I already know what the tax rates are on average. They're considerably lower in retirement ages. It's like single digits.
Yeah, the way I kind of look at it is if I'm contributing $6,000 and I'm in that top tax bracket,
mm-hmm.
IRS, the federal government's actually contributing about $2,300 of that $6,000 for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to make those returns up with a Roth.
Yep. This is not a good question. Can I bug?
Go ahead.
If I buy a stock 10 years ago and do not remember the original price, there's no record of it. Go back and look at the chart. There has to be a record of it somewhere.
Yeah, we run into that occasionally. Hopefully we figure out when you bought it. And sometimes the company you bought it from can tell you.
Yeah.
Unless there's been a dozen mergers in between.
I did that, guys. So I had a company I bought in 2001. And they got purchased, and then the company that purchased them changed their name, and then they went public. And I had no idea because I quit. I thought that they were toast after the merger. I was like, oh, it's nothing. I never hear about the company anyway. It was because they changed their flipping name. So one of my buddies who was in the company just completely randomly, we were talking about it. It was in a business group, and he talked about what he was doing. I was like, that's funny. And we had some technology once in a company. It was this. He goes, yeah, we acquired that. And I'm like, really? What are you guys? And he goes, oh, we used to go into this name. And we went public. So it was like $14 and my basis was 15 cents or something stupid like that. Yeah, I had no idea. I was like, oh, crap. And then I had to go back and find my proof of payment so I could get my certificates. It was kind of fun. And then I donated it. Somebody says, if it's too hard to find the cost basis, Cedric, you're my new best friend. Because it's absolutely right. Then you just take a deduction. It's 100%. You don't have to worry about your basis. Let all that money. Take a big tax deduction and let the charity do it. I actually did that to my own charity. I gave it to mm-hmm. my charity. It's 30% limitation of your adjusted gross income, but you can just carry forward any excess amount. So, all right. Doing a cost segregation on a condo that was purchased out of my inherited trust to pay off the beneficiaries. Can I take bonus depreciation? Let's see you, Jeff.
I'm not sure I understand about the part to pay off the other beneficiaries.
So inherited trust. So let's say mom and dad passed away and we're the two brothers that are left behind. And so I buy your half.
Mm-hmm.
Can I do a cost segregation and take bonus depreciation? I buy your half. There's no gain because it was inherited. So there was a step up in basis. Let's say it's $1 million building. Can I depreciate even though I bought it out of the trust? Or if it's sitting in the trust, which wouldn't make any sense because he bought it out. But let's just say they split it and they said, hey, you take the real estate. Jeff takes all the cash. Yeah, you could absolutely.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Especially like you said, if you're buying out the trust to take over the property, that's a new property to you.
Yep. And you get to depreciate it at a step up basis. All right. Let's go through this stuff. You can write it off twice if you inherit it. I'm reading his donated. I literally just looked it up and said donate it, and I just repeated it. It's a good thing nobody's swearing because I would have just repeated it. I'm like the guy on Will Ferrell when he repeats everything as the anchorman. There we go. All right, let's jump on. I inherited a property that I've been living in it. So it's an inheritance. This is really important, by the way. That's a dispositive fact. I inherited something. I got married. And now you're going through a divorce. And to avoid paying tax and having to share the profit. So I imagine that the worry is that you're going to have to sell the property. So you shouldn't. And here's why. When you inherit something or if you get a gift or you have pain and suffering, awards, things like that, those are considered separate property. Those are yours. The gain on that property may be community in nature during the term of your marriage, depending on the state you're in. So let's say that I had inherited a property, it was $1 million, got married, it went up to 1.3. I would, so my spouse would be entitled to one half of the increase, so long as I could accurately track this. It's very unlikely that you're going to have to sell that unless you have a whole bunch of other assets and it's a mess. Chances are you inherited it. You can show that it was on your side. This is why people do prenups. This is why people do postnuptials, and they want to make sure that they're classifying this. Or if you're in the divorce, you're going to say, here's my separate property. And then you have the marital assets, the assets that were acquired or improved during the marriage. So that's something you're going to have to go through with your divorce lawyer or your dissolution attorney. putting it in an LLC does not help you in the slightest. In fact, it would probably cause them to give you a little bit of a raised eyebrow. Like, what are you doing? What are you trying to get over on us?
Yeah, I want to say that if it's a community property state, and this is definitely a separate property, I'm not sure that the income, I think the income is separate also from the sale.
I've seen separate property be, like in Washington State where it's community, somebody will have the separate property and they'll grab the income off it and create a distribution okay. to the to spouses.
And what I was going to say, you kind of gave the attorney answer, so I'm going to go a different route.
Mm-hmm.
Is I think this property is entirely yours. However, in divorce negotiations, this may be your most valuable piece. You may have other stuff that your spouse is entitled to that you may not want to give up. So sometimes it's a bit of negotiating to keep what's yours and so forth. I mean, haven't you seen that where...
I think all bets are off when you go into a divorce court because it's fair and equitable. And there's no such thing as fair and equitable, everybody's using loosey-goosey. Sometimes they have some mathematical formulas, but it's up to the judge. And, so you just want to say, here's the facts, lay out the facts really clearly and make a good case for yourself. But again, you're better off avoiding court if you can.
Ask Jeff Bezos.
Ask Jeff Bezos. Somebody's asking me to go over the book. I'm going to go back to the book real quick. So Infinity Investing, the book itself, what is it about? So some folks are asking. When we look at who's successful, we can see that they do very consistent things. And a lot of times it's the opposite of what you're being told out there. I used to joke. So whatever they're telling you on TV, they're lying. It's not the best. It's not the fastest. It's not going to make you look pretty. It's not, like everything that they're constantly putting at you, it's not going to give you an 8-pack. Probably they're lying, right? Or they're playing loose with the facts. And so what we look at is certain things that people do. One of the things that I've noticed is that the people that do invest in cash flow assets like dividend stock or residential real estate, they forget what they pay for it after a while because they don't really care because it's producing the income. If I buy Tesla, I care what it's selling for because that's the only way I'm making money is if I sell it. If you have Coca-Cola, for example, and you're Warren Buffett, you've already gotten your money back. It's been paying you all along. If you buy AT&T right now, its dividend yield is 7%, for example, right? So I'm gonna double my value just in the dividend in 10 years. So the rule of 72, it's gonna pay for itself. And so I'm just basically letting it buy itself and then just give me gravy. And that's a lot different than growth stocks. And then we show you another way. We do, somebody says, do you cover options? Yes. So if you're going to be the casino, there's an old adage thing. And it's, if I'm an option buyer, I have to be right about three things: the volatility, the price, and the length of time. Like I'm going to have that time value. If I am the seller, I only have to be right about one, which is really kind of loosely the price, right? I sell it, and as long as the stock doesn't go crazy down, I'm getting that option money. And I mean, even if it goes down, I could sell it, but then I'm uncovered. So I want to, in the option, you could buy it back and sell your stock if that happened. But it's really hard to lose money doing that, especially if you're not in a volatile stock. And so Infinity, it's just a real simple, all it stands for is when you have enough income from passive sources to cover your expenses, you no longer need to work anymore. And that's called Infinity. When I do Infinity Net Worth, I say, how many days, how many years could you survive without working? Like if I just said, I'm done working, I'm going to retire today, how long would it take me to burn through all my assets? If you have passive income that exceeds your expenses, that answer is infinity. You could literally work forever. And so I worked with a bunch of really cool people. I think I may have mentioned David McShane, who just passed away last week, horrible. 40 years experience, Mark A. Latimer, Eric Dodds, Rocky Horner, all these people that I just sit there and chirp, and Jeff and I go back and forth. And that's all it is. It's not a get rich quick. It's a get rich really slowly, because all we're trying to do is say, you're the casino. Be patient. Be patient. It'll happen. And that's it. So it works.
Yeah, it's really about doing things the smart way, not the fast way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But you said it and it was great. And you keep Like you can come in and join us for free. We'll teach you how to trade. We'll teach you how to do it right. And you can do it. If we order the Kindle version, we'll get the hard. I'll still do it for you guys. Again, books for us aren't money makers. They're information sharing tools. They're client makers. The more people read and the more they educate themselves, the more compelling a resource we are. Jeff, speaking of which, go to our YouTube channel. We have a ton of content up there. You have Coffee with Carl. You have Tony Talks. You have my sorry mug sitting there telling you any questions that somebody asks, I like to throw up there. You got Clint, who does a fantastic job. We have so many people. Amanda does a fantastic job. She's up there. Elliot's up there a bunch of times on the on the Tony Talks. You have some really cool people, I guess I should say. Carl Zellner and all these guys. Michael Bowman, Clint Coons. Lots of cool people. Are you sitting? You need to do more videos. No, you're on these all the time.
And they're fairly short. They don't go on for an hour and 15 minutes.
I know. I promised him that we'd be done at 4:15 today.
But no, they're fairly short and to the point. And I just listened to Clint's BRRR.
Buy or build, rent. I like that one.
Build, rent, rehab, refinance.
Or refinance, repeat. So it's build, rent, refinance, repeat on the building side. Or you can do the buy, rehab, rent, repeat. Clint did that?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Teaching him well. I told Jeff that we'd be done at 4:30, but I didn't say AM or PM.
Wait, what?
Right. If I control a foreign domiciled company, then what would trigger me being personally taxed on that company's profits?
I'm assuming you mean a foreign corporation.
Mm-hmm. Or it could be anything. So if, let's say it's an LLC in United Arab Emirates and it's flowing back to me and the company makes money. I'm paying tax on 100% of that.
Yeah.
Now let's say it's a corporation, a C corporation, under a different where the tax or the profits are taxed locally. Then would that be taxed to me? If I'm in control of that organization.
No, not unless you're getting paid dividends or drawing a salary.
Yep. Now, what if they paid me on it? What if they paid me a salary while I was overseas?
If you were overseas on a pretty much constant basis, your income may be partially excluded in the U.S.
It's about $180,000 that I can earn overseas, right? As long as I'm being taxed in that other jurisdiction.
Well, let's say you have a company in France who is taxing you. Personally, on your salary, you're also going to get a credit based on what was paid to that foreign company, country.
Unless it's excluded entirely. And if it's not, and I'm like, let's say I reside in the United States, and I'm getting paid, I would get a credit based off the treaty. This is where it gets kind of muddy. You got to make sure you have a treaty with that country. Otherwise, you might get taxed twice. The other fun one is if I get dividends from a foreign source, it gets a little funky. Like in the UK, you could find yourself getting a double tax under that circumstance. You got to be a little careful. You want to have somebody look at it, make sure that that you don't harm yourself. And then the other big thing is the FBAR regulations don't require that you get paid anything. If you have control over an account with greater than $10,000, the penalty for not disclosing that is half the account per year. It's draconian. So, you know, we had a client about 5-6 years ago, maybe it's longer than that now, who had a savings account in Canada and didn't report about $70 of interest. And he had a big firm, I think it was Marsh or something like that. I shouldn't actually say a name. He had a big four firm who disclosed it and put him under saying, hey, we'll just disclose it and ask for mercy. And the mercy was 25% hit of the value of the account. And it cost him $37,000 for $70 worth of interest. So that doesn't happen if you stay domestic. So if you're doing foreign activities, be very careful. Make sure you have somebody who knows what they're doing. Make sure you're disclosing what needs to be disclosed and paying tax on the income that you receive. Don't do this. I got a debit card and I'm going to buy stuff here.
Yeah.
And not pay tax on it.
The minimum penalty for not filing a required foreign form is $10,000. So be very careful.
Yeah. All right. Here's a fun one. Can you include your roof replacement for a solar tax credit?
You like this one, huh?
I do. I like it because it's not straightforward.
You cannot. The roof replacement is, are you going to disagree with him?
Okay. No, I'm just teasing you.
The roof replacement is not part of the solar installation. The solar credit is only for the solar installation, the labor to put it on.
You ever seen a Tesla roof?
How many cars can you put up there?
I don't have any. Put a couple of roadsters on your roof. No, it's kind of funky, but you can write it off if it's dual usage. So if I put up a roof, the portion that is the solar and part of the solar array mm-hmm. is deductible, even if it serves the dual purpose of acting as a roof. The components like the trusses around it mm-hmm. would not be, because that would be a roof. That would be part of the roof. It gets muddy. This is why I like this one, because I was looking at it going, And because I was looking at the Tesla's roofs. If you were in Texas and everybody else lost their electricity, guess who didn't? Those guys, like the snow just melted right off it. It was kind of weird. I saw a bunch of pictures of them.
Want to charge your phone? $100.
I said, yeah, you want to charge? I'll give you a charge. But anyway, yeah, so it's kind of funky. So if you replace your roof, then a portion of it, like again, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. You'd want to make sure that you're actually having some allocation of which portions are just only roof and which portions are part of the solar. And so a panel that does both can be, it is 100% solar. If a component is only a part of the, only has a function as a roof and doesn't have any necessity or usefulness on the solar side, then it is not deductible.
Most solar companies are going to certify how much is eligible for that credit. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to bring up something else on this is you hear a lot. I know it's really big in Nevada, leasing versus buying.
Mm-hmm.
Any opinion on that? Is there an advantage to one over the other?
Well, yes. Leasing of the roof.
Leasing of the solar
system. Yeah. So if I am buying it as an individual, I'm going to get a 26% tax credit. If I lease, I don't believe I'm going to get the same.
No, you're not going to get any.
But the other big one is the depreciation. If I am buying a unit for a rental property, then not only do I get the solar credit, not only get the 26%, but I'm going to depreciate 87% of the value. It's you lose half of the credit against your basis for depreciation. So you end up with, you know, so if you bought you put a roof on there for $20,000, you're going to get I should use 10,000. So if you put a roof on there for 10,000, you're going to get an $8,700 deduction. Plus you're going to get a $2,600 tax credit dollar for dollar against your tax liability, the depreciation. So if you're a landlord, I was talking about this with a senator's assistant, actually, a client who's in DC and works with a lot of the green power folks. And I was like, would you please just give landlords the incentive, like make it juicy enough and they'll all slap solar on every property they have. If you make it worth their while, it's the states that like to gunk you up with how much they'll actually pay for your electricity mm-hmm. and stuff. And if it goes vacant and then you have to deal with all the mess of getting the approvals. Like who is it? One of those comedians, he's been waiting over 1,000 days to get the permit to put his solar on his house. Like that type of stuff's going to chill it. But if you give people an incentive to do it, they will. Last question of today. And look at that. How is the office in-home deduction being treated this year, probably, since most of us have been working from home? Is it still a red flag for realtors?
Well, if you're an employee, there is no home office deduction.
You just ruined everybody's day.
If you're being taxed as a Schedule C, and a lot of real estate brokers are, or real estate agents, I should say, are being taxed as a Schedule C where they're getting a 1099, then that is perfectly okay if you have a home office to deduct reasonable expenses.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to put this up here. The home office is only for sole proprietors. There's no such thing as an employee home office. They might say home office, but the actual tax form, do you know what form it is? 8869 or what is it?
Oh, 8889?
It's the
home office form you're talking about, though.
There's a home office form, and you could do the $5 per square foot per year as a safe harbor. But that's the trigger. Like, it's not that you're doing a home office. That's the trigger. is that you're a sole proprietor. That's the trigger. Because as a sole proprietor, the IRS wins between 94 and 95% of all audits. So you're putting a big mark on your forehead that says, audit me, right? And the sole proprietor gets audited 700% more than S-Corps right now. It's actually going up over 1,000% under the last bit. And that's why you see realtors getting targeted. It's not because of anything they're doing. It's not because they're realtors. Because if you file as a sole proprietor, your risk of audit goes up considerably higher than if you were a corporate entity. Now, here's the deal. If I'm an employee, I can get reimbursed for my what I have at home that I'm making available to the business. So they can read, like, so let's say Jeff says, hey, Toby, I have a home office. Technically, I could say, hey, Jeff, I'll reimburse you. How much of your home is this? And when we are not a home office, when we're doing a reimbursement for an administrative office being used in the home, I could do net square footage, the number of room method. I could still do regular square footage. I get to pick which one's best for me. So let's say that Jeff is using 20% of his usable square feet in his house for his office. As an employer, I could reimburse him 20% of everything from his property taxes, 20% of any mortgage insurance or mortgage insurance and mortgage interest. I could reimburse him 20% of the depreciable value of that property. I could reimburse him for utilities. If he has a cleaning lady or cleaning person or cleaning man comes in, I should be better than that, right? Whoever it is, I come in and I have a cleaner, I can reimburse 20% of that. And so you could actually go through and do it. And it's not taxable to Jeff. It is deductible to the company. But in order to do that, I have to be an employee. And I cannot be an employee of a partnership in which I'm a partner or a sole proprietorship. It has to be an S-Corp, C-Corp, nonprofit, LLC taxes, an S-Corp, LLC taxes, a C-Corp. And you little goobers are going, are you going to reimburse ABA employees? We're like, we bought a whole bunch of stuff for everybody. We made sure that we were covering the expense. Employers actually are saying, like, hey, if you want to work from home, it's on you.
And ABA is a good example of that's actually a choice that the employees get to make. Do I want to work from the office? Do I want to work from home? We don't prohibit anybody from working in the office, and we don't force anybody.
We'll cover the equipment. We'll give them the computer and the camera and all that jazz. But here's what you do. So if it's your company, you're probably going to be really generous with yourself, right? You're going to reimburse everything. It's not reported on your tax return. That's why it's not a red flag. The reason so the home office is known as a red flag is because it's a separate form. And all the IRS has to do is say, oh, you have it. It doesn't show up on a corporate return. It doesn't say administrative office for the home for an employee. It just says lease expense.
And the problem with that form is it's a goofy form and it often gets filled out incorrectly.
They make it really hard to do the home office deduction. All right. So we had way too much fun today, right? Did you guys have fun today? See, except my employees were all crying now. They're like, you're such an ogre. Ogre, right? All right, come back and listen to some of these. We have fun. We enjoy it. Go to our podcast page. And then we always put our replays in the Platinum Portal. If you have questions, please do email them in. We get a lot. Like, we have thousands of people now sending us questions. So if it takes us a little bit to get back to you, we're only human. Nobody's getting paid to do it. We're just trying to be as open and as transparent as possible. And I also pick the questions that we throw up here. I just go through those. They actually distill them down and they give me about 50 questions to choose from. And I was like, this one, this one, this one, this one. And then I give them to Jeff this morning?
This morning, yeah.
Say, hey, Jeff, this is what we're going to talk about. And then he's busy all day going, oh, crud. So hopefully he knows all of them. Otherwise, he's toast. All right. Thank you for all these answers. I day trade every day. Well, that's an interesting one here. I might pick this one up just because I want to be evil. I day trade every day and did for 2020. Realized gains about $500,000. Exposure. Yeah, you're going to have some tax. Can't go back, but what would you do? I'd put that trading account into an LLC, tax it as a partnership, have a corporation as probably 25 to 30% owner of that partnership. And then that way, if you'd had your $500,000, we'd be able to write off all the expenses associated with it. I think you're still going to be able to if you day trade it. Hopefully you don't have another W-2 job because they'll nix you on that one. But a good chunk of it, let's just say 100 to 150,000 would flow over to the corporate account. And instead of being hit at the 30% plus rate, 37%, it would have flown into a 21% flat tax and you would have it in the corporation. And what I'd probably do is pay it even more than that and maybe do a 401k and try to get as much money of that as humanly possible into a tax deferred account so that you could trade it in there. And if you're making that type of profit, if you do it inside of a 401k, you don't pay tax until, you know, you're forced to take some money out at 72.5. But even then, it's about 4% of its value every year. It's not a lot. Like you could stretch that. You could stretch that out and really blow that thing up without having to worry about paying tax on it. So that's what I would tell you. We do have classes coming up, I believe, that we're going to work on traders, cryptocurrency too, Forex traders. I know that we're going to be doing one here where we're going to really be diving into all the active investment stuff, but that'll be fun. So Jeff, we're early. Thank you guys. Really appreciate you coming on, and we will see you in 2 weeks for the next Tax Tuesday. What I'll do is I won't quit out of this. I'll keep I'll allow you guys to keep asking questions and for our guys to keep answering questions. I can see we have some open questions, and our guys will knock them out for you so that you don't have to worry about it. We'll make sure that we do that. So I'm going to stop video. I'll stop my share, and we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.